Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for September 28th in the year of our Lord, 2015. This is hour two of two. And the goal always to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founders. It's incredibly simple. We don't need a revolution, but we do want a restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth, and we can get it done. What made America great? The answer is the supreme law, the checks and balances, a good, honest, moral people. That's what we got to bring back, folks. We're asking for your help. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Last hour, we talked a little bit about the Value Voters Summit. They say for the first time, Donald Trump didn't win a conservative poll. He actually took fifth place. Who won? Ted Cruz. Yeah. Second, Ben Carson. Third, Marco Rubio. Huckabee. Then I think Marco Rubio and then Trump. And then, look, Bush didn't even show up. Carly Fiorina didn't even show up. There's a couple of other goofballs that didn't even show up either. Rand Paul didn't even place, it doesn't seem like. Which is strange because Ron's dad won a couple of years in a row. Two or three years in a row. Rand, I think, did quite well one year also. So what gives? Well, on the Value Voters Summit stage, there was two people paddling, and it was Marco Rubio and Donald Trump. And Marco Rubio has decided to take off the gloves and give Trump a little taste of his own medicine. Being very in-your-face, etc. And you know what? Rubio's very articulate, very quick on his feet, very good. I don't believe he's the guy to lead the nation, but you can't deny he's a great speaker, and he's good on his feet, and he's savvy, to say the least. Has Donald Trump met his match? Time will tell. But the interesting thing is the exchange. Donald Trump took to the stage and called Marco Rubio a clown at the Value Voters Summit. Listen to this.
You have this clown, Marco Rubio. I've been so nice to him. I've been so nice. And then, no, but he's in favor of immigration, and he has been. He has been. It was the Gang of Eight.
There you have it. What do you think of that? Very, very critical. The crowd didn't like it, see, because the crowd likes Rubio. Donald Trump has a valid point that on immigration, you got a problem with Marco Rubio. And the battle raged. Kurt Crosby's with me, then our guest in seconds. What do you think of that, Kurt?
Well, you know, as far as I can see, you know, the whole immigration is a key for most people. Apparently, it wasn't that big of an issue for them, Sam, I guess. The whole Gang of Eight thing, that's where you had McCain, Rubio, I don't know who else the other guys were, but, you know, gang really fits that group, in my opinion, and maybe Rubio's trying to change his tune to that. But anytime you hang around with McCain, I think you're in trouble.
Yeah, you got that right. Now, on 60 Minutes, they asked Donald Trump also why he's so thin-skinned. Hey, Donald, you're really good at dishing it out, but when anybody has anything to say to you, you don't take it very well. What's up with that? Donald responds, and I'm going to get into his response and then introduce our guest and let him chime in on this. But here's what 60 Minutes said. Here's what Donald Trump responded. Listen.
Why so thin-skinned?
I don't like lies. I don't mind a bad story. If you did a bad story on me for 60 Minutes, if it were a fair story, I wouldn't be thin-skinned at all. You know, some of the media is among the worst people I've ever met. And I mean a pretty good percentage is really a terrible group of people. They write lies. They write false stories. They know they're false. It makes no difference. And frankly, I don't call it thin-skinned. I'm angry.
But a reporter asked you a couple of hard questions at the first debate, and the whole week after that, it's war on that reporter.
Well, I don't think that was a fair question.
An impression is created, though, that you like to dish it out, but you can't take a punch.
Oh, I think I can take it. I can take it if it's fair. Again, if people say things that are false, which happens a lot with me, if people say things that are false, I will fight. Like harder than anybody. If I do something wrong, and that happens, and they write a fair story that I did something wrong, there's nothing to fight about. I can handle that. I don't like lying. You know, I'm a very honorable guy. I don't like lies.
There you have it. The debate rages. Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union, our well-known guest. Welcome back to the broadcast, President of NTU. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
What do you think about that exchange?
Well, first, I kind of wonder what the definition of a fair punch is to begin with.
Great point.
That's a rather interesting statement. I can take a punch as long as it's fair. Overall, though, Donald Trump has injected some very interesting ideas into this campaign. I'm going to be especially interested in seeing the details of his tax reform plan, because when he was considering a run for president several years ago, he had some very controversial views about whether or not to retain the death tax, how high income tax rates should go. And even prior to that time, he was saying that the tax system was too complex and burdensome and he would like to fix it. This was before he was really a serious presidential candidate. But you can't tell really where Trump stands on a lot of the nitty-gritty of the tax issues, with the exception of he wants to go after hedge fund managers. Well, that's fine. I don't think it's a good idea, but we're going to need more detail than that.
Well, he did have in his book, Making America Number One Again, back in 2011, he did say several things that I think are pretty interesting. He wants a 1% tax sale, or I'm sorry, 1% income tax on those who make $30,000 a year or less. He wants 5% on those who make $30,000 to $100,000 a year. He wants 10% on those who make $100,000 to $1 million. And then he wants 15% on anybody who makes above $1 million. He wants to, one, bring the income tax for companies to zero. And he wants to allow money to repatriate or come back to the United States. On the surface, it sounds awesome, huh?
It does. Although, when you look at some of the news reports that were being generated over the weekend, and Trump apparently said this just about an hour or 2 hours ago, he said, well, there are many people right now who are paying zero income tax, and that wouldn't change. Well, that would automatically mean that his proposal back in 2011 for the 1% rate on some Americans would no longer be valid, because at that level, the $30,000 level, there are certainly folks with a zero, even a negative income tax liability, thanks to the earned income tax credit. So already, if we're to believe what Trump is saying now, there are going to be some key differences from what he was proposing about 4 years ago.
They say that today is the day that he's going to release a lot more detail, right?
Yes, indeed.
Any idea what it's going to be? Hopefully, Donald Trump, he wants to basically call everybody and sit down with everybody. Hopefully, he sat down with the NTU to get a handle on what they think would be best, right?
We have been asked to provide our advice, several candidates, actually.
Hold on. Trump asked you for your advice?
A person with the Trump campaign. I should clarify.
All right. And I'm not trying to be negative, but that's a big difference, right?
Yes, that's right. Certainly not Donald Trump himself.
Because, see, I think Donald should call up and say, Pete, it's Don. Hey, I'm hoping we could do lunch. Do you like, the Olive Garden? We'd sit down for a salad and soup and talk. Is that cool, Pete? That didn't happen, right?
That did not happen.
But the reason I mention it like that, kind of tongue-in-cheek, is that's the way Donald almost wants you to believe that it is. And it might be with the bigwigs, but it isn't so with the rest of us, huh?
No, it isn't. And even with those candidates whom we've worked with directly in the U.S. Senate, for example, Rand Paul and Marco Rubio, we do have a good political, personal relationship with some of those folks, as well as their staff. Many of their campaign staff have contacted us to say, well, what do you think about the defense spending sector or the tax reform issue? And we're happy to provide our views to anyone who wants them, who it might be seeking the office of president. And I can tell you, some have not taken our advice.
Well, and the reason I bring that up like that is part of the problem that I have with Donald Trump is we have no idea where he stands or what he would do. And he's saying a lot of the right things. I don't deny that. But we have no track record by which to lean on or to look at. We do know that he's changed his views on almost everything, including, hey, you write a book and you paint out your goal to make America number one, and then now you're going to roll out 4 years later a tax plan that has several significant tinkerings all I'm telling you is I'm not sure where we stand with Trump is the problem.
Yes, that is true. And I think people have a right to be concerned about whether he would actually follow through on some of the policy proposals he's already made regarding immigration. There are many folks who are concerned about the immigration issue and have said these are fantastic proposals that Donald Trump has proposed to close the border, to dramatically restrict future immigration, to send those who are already here illegally back to their countries.
Hang on, Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union. Quick pause, Liberty Roundtable Live.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, so Donald Trump's immigration plans sound awesome. A lot of people are like, you know what, this is the way we got to go. Other people are saying, no, it costs way more money than you think. You can't get the Mexicans to pay for it. The debate is on who pays for what, how. If we give the Mexicans a bunch of money, and then we reduce the amount of money we give to the Mexicans and put that money into the feds, is that the Mexicans paying for it, or is that us paying for it? We're just deciding how we're going to spend the money for the Mexicans. I'm not downing anybody. What I find fascinating about this whole debate, Pete Sepp, I don't know if you're familiar with Operation Wetback, but back in the 1950s, there was literally a government program called Operation Wetback that would let or prevent Mexicans from crossing the border and living in America. And it was actually the Mexican government asked for the program, and we obliged and partnered with them. program worked very well. I apologize for the derogatory name. I didn't come up with it. Nevertheless, Donald Trump's going to blame it on the Mexicans and say they'll pay for it. A short 50-plus years ago, they were the ones asking us to stop the illegal flood of immigration. And now we act like they're the biggest enemy. Something's not right with this whole discussion, sir.
Well, yes. And, of course, if you pay attention to the news report, actually, that was just on your broadcast, there's the question of where immigration will be coming from, legal or illegal, in the next several decades, and it seems to be it will be switching
to the Asian market
sources rather than Latin American sources. So that opens up a whole different set of questions. We can tell from at least parts of Trump's immigration reform plan that there are associated costs. We estimate a net of about $33 billion over the next 5 years to do things like building a southern border wall, tripling the number of immigration officers. There will be some savings, though. Tax credit payments to illegal immigrants would drop by about $1.2 billion a year, assuming the plan is successful and works as advertised. So a mixed bag there, but that's probably the minimum amount of money that Donald Trump will either need to require that Mexico pay or come up with spending reductions elsewhere in the budget or raise taxes.
What about his idea, though, that we are to give $100 billion to him and this is a drop in the bucket, even if it costs a chunk of money overall? If we reduce the amount of money we give in foreign aid, it'll be all right and it'll be a net benefit.
Potentially. That's a workable scenario. Again, though, it depends upon whether the border enforcement is really going to be as effective as Trump wants it to be, and whether the resources are being aimed at the right type of immigration over the long run.
So where do you say we go with this then? Is it going to be impossible to break it down for what it really means or what it really is?
I think that there is sufficient detail now that we can say, well, here are the minimum costs to do things like building the border wall, hiring more agents. Now, the economic impact of whether, for example, you end up raising wages for workers who are already here because you no longer have this cheap illegal supply of labor, those are still open questions. And whether those benefits are going to offset completely the cost to taxpayers, whether Trump could, for example, institute some of the tariffs he's planning on doing, and whether that will bring in the sufficient money from Mexico, that's still some serious guesswork.
It's a lot of guesswork, a lot of unknowns, and that's kind of why I say, you know, I appreciate a lot of Trump's bold statements against the media. A lot of Trump statements are bold against other candidates, saying you guys are a bunch of wimps and you don't get it done. It's hard to argue with any of that, sir.
That's right. And there are only a few presidential candidates right now with enough specifics, even in their legislative records, to be able to make a judgment of what they would do to the federal budget. Obviously, folks who are in the Senate right now but are also running for president have the most clear records on what they would do with the federal budget. Rand Paul still stands above the rest in terms of budget cutters, at least as far as the legislation he has sponsored or co-sponsored to bring the budget under control. It would, in fact, if it were all enacted, and, you know, that's not going to happen with President Obama in the White House, but if it were all signed into law, the federal deficit would right now go away if Rand Paul's agenda were enacted in its entirety.
Now, it's kind of interesting because what about Rand Paul's income tax? Doesn't he say 14.5%?
Yes, he is proposing, along with Mike Lee, a dramatic reform of the tax system. There are many elements to it, and if you were to break it down, it's basically a 14.5% flat tax on all individuals and businesses. All deductions eliminated except for mortgages and charity contributions. The first $50,000 of income for a family of four would be exempt from the tax. That would roughly equate to the situation we have now as far as the number of people who are not liable for federal income tax. There might be a few more households at that working class level who would be liable for tax than today, but not many. And so that's preserving at least that part of the status quo, many other households would see a somewhat lower tax as well.
So it's hard to get our arms around who would even do what, sir. I'm having a hard time. I like Rand Paul. I appreciate the reform and the cuts, but man, a 14.5% tax would beat up a lot of Americans. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, there are, of course, trade-offs involved. The lowest personal tax rate right now at the individual level is 10%, but most households in the middle class will end up paying a 15% rate on at least part of their income. You have Ben Carson, who has been saying many times that he prefers some kind of flat tax that would be in the neighborhood of 10%. Well, if you design a tax at that rate and you're willing to live with a lot less revenue, that is a feasible tax reform plan. Again, though, we're not seeing the level of detail to be able to say how many households would be paying less under a plan like that, how many more. It's very difficult to tell. There are only a few people in the presidential race who have proposed specific proposals that would be able to get introduced into Congress as legislation. You know, there again, Rand Paul and Mike Lee have come up with a plan. Marco Rubio has a plan. There are a few others who have the degree of detail where we can say, yeah, there are predictable economic effects here that would stand at least good odds of coming true.
Rand Paul has the best odds of coming through for several reasons. One, he's a proven outsider. Yeah, he's been making more compromises than his dad, thus the phrase Rand is no Ron. Nevertheless, he does have detailed concrete plans, and he does have a track record that we can point to, right?
Yes, that is true.
And maybe that's why the mainstream press gives him such little credit, because they don't want to see him actually gain wings. What do you think?
Yeah. I would say so. I think that's a large part of it. Plus, I think that virtually any senator in the race right now for president has a leg up on many of the others, and that you have to legislate. If you want to be credible in the United States Senate, you have to have proposals that you can put your signature on. And so folks like Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, they're already ahead in terms of offering specificity. That doesn't mean the other candidates can't match them if they're willing to do it. I think there are several, though, who are saying, well, I'm going to hang back a little, let these guys fight it out with each other, and perhaps I can come in at a later point with my own kind of proposal and show them all up while they're arguing amongst themselves. I think that's really a disservice to the American people. Yes, the race for president will not be decided this year. We're talking about November 2016, but they're all in the race now. They want the votes in the primaries starting early next year. They owe it to the American people to start providing details on where they stand.
All right, Donald Trump even went on to talk about fair trade versus free trade on 60 Minutes. He said we're being defrauded by all these countries. All right, that debate will come up in seconds. How does that relate to taxes, huh?
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, Sam Bushman, Kirk Crosby, and Mr. Pete Sepp, President of National Taxpayers Union, on the radio, NTU.org. So which candidates have actually worked with you the most and actually had the guts to take your guidance and advice, Pete Sepp?
Well, on a daily basis, we have probably the closest working relationships with the current senators who are in the presidential race. Marco Rubio and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are always in close consultation with us, primarily on the legislation that they're working on. But of course, that legislation has to translate into some of the ideas that they're circulating with their presidential campaigns.
Which one seems to be the most genuine? Which one seems to take your advice the most? We're not looking for an endorsement because you don't make endorsements, but you can tell us which one really seems to be genuine and actually takes the advice the most.
Well, I'd say that Ted Cruz's folks listen an awful lot to the advice of organizations like mine when it comes to crafting good tax policy, finding reductions in the federal budget that are very urgently needed. And Rand Paul's team has been open to many of the ideas that your traditional so-called conservatives don't like to talk about. How big should our defense spending footprint be, for example? I think Rand Paul has asked some legitimate questions there that deserve to be answered by many of the Republican candidates. They've not been doing as good a job at that. I find folks like Chris Christie and Carly Farina, they have many good ideas, but they're also proposing large increases in defense expenditures that may not be sustainable over the long term.
And now you bring up kind of the divide, if you will, the civil war, to use a term, within the Republican Party of who's kind of who, and now that they've gotten rid of John Boehner, they say it took Barack by surprise, but I don't believe it. I bet Barack knew before anybody else. Boehner and Barack seem to be pretty good buddies. Nevertheless, the question is, some are saying, hey, Kevin McCarthy's going to jump into the mix. He'll make a big difference in the House. Others are saying, not so fast, nothing will change. Look, we said when the Republicans got control of the House, it would change. When they got control of this, it would change. When they that, and it hasn't changed yet. They had control of the House, the Senate, the White House, and the majority positions on the court, and they still didn't get it done years ago go-rounds. So what gives? And you think that John Boehner resignation is going to have an influence on what they get done?
It certainly will have an influence. And in the short term, what we might see is a new era of bipartisan comity over the federal budget. And that's generally not an ideal situation when the federal budget deficit is still quite large. It's a little less than half $1 trillion now, but it will be headed past that mark soon enough as entitlement programs begin to exert pressure on other areas of the federal budget. We can, of course, come to an agreement now to suspend part of the caps that were put into place on parts of the federal budget back in 2011. We've already relaxed them once. There might be an agreement on a deal to do it again. That would be tremendously harmful to the prospects of deficit reduction.
In fact, some say that's already done. By the time John Boehner resigned, the poison pill was swallowed, and he already made deals that'll sell us down the river. Do you think that's true?
It is quite possible that the groundwork was already laid to do that. In fact, we expressed great fear that this was happening and were part of a coalition of conservative organizations warning members of Congress to avoid busting the caps again. No more deals. The 2011 budget caps, even though they've only applied to part of the federal expenditure apparatus, they've been quite effective in slowing the growth rate of federal spending. It's one reason why we have a deficit that's under half $1 trillion a year right now. It's going to go up again if we start taking shortcuts and say, well, we can suspend the caps for just another year or two while we get over this rough spot. And, you know, the excuses start piling up, and all of a sudden, we have a major budget deficit problem again, with entitlements also entering the picture and making it even worse.
The freight trains are coming, and we continue to play on the tracks. It boggles the mind. The McConnell camp is in the crosshairs now, Kurt, huh?
Well, that's exactly right, Sam, with the, I guess you could say resignation of Boehner. You've got some who have set their sights on Mr. McConnell next. They say one big shot, his name is, I guess you say it, Villery. He's a Louisiana GOP chairman. Almost like villain. But anyway,
and Hillary mixed
a 12-year, Anyway, a 12-year guy on the job down there in Louisiana. They call him the longest-serving state GOP chairman in the nation. And he's also the vice chairman of the Republican National Committee. And he is basically saying, I guess he works right alongside, they say, Chairman Rince Priebus. We always call him Prince Rebus. But anyway, they say... this is what he had to say about him. He said, Mitch is a good, honorable guy, but the base is leaving our party. He said this in an interview with the Washington Times. He says, I'm out in the field all the time, and we have all our elections this year for state offices, and it's hurting us tremendously with our elections. So anyway, we'll see what happens there. But if Mr. McConnell retired, I think that would be another really nice day, at least in my opinion.
Oh, there you go. What do you say? Are they going to be able to, is that enough? What's the one I'm looking for? Is that enough momentum, Pete Sepp, to oust Boehner and now push for McConnell to bail too?
There is a lot of momentum to do that. And of course, there's this constant war within the GOP caucus of, well, do we try and make incremental gains, try and play the left's game of passing small pieces of legislation that add up to a whole lot? Or are we going to keep throwing Hail Mary passes, to use a football analogy, and hoping to score the touchdowns that way? I like to think that either strategy can work if it's applied vigorously. And that's one of the criticisms of Majority Leader McConnell, that there is not enough energy behind either one of those strategies to make them work effectively. And that's going to be very important for the Senate GOP caucus. That is where the danger zone is going to be in the next election. The House of Representatives is likely to remain Republican. The Senate may very well not be. And while Republican or Democrat, the party designations don't necessarily matter so much as the ideological designations.
In other words, they need to deliver now or they're going to lose and have less support than they have had. And the question is, how do they deliver now but not shut down the government? And how do they... And it seems to me that we need to change the discussion point to, well, they say, well, fund essential or non-essential services of the government. They need to talk about constitutional responsibilities. Yeah. And we're going to fund everything constitutional, and then we're going to hold our ground, and we're going to demand, and we're going to really appear everywhere and make sure the nation understands the Senate and the president will not go along with, even though the Republicans control the Senate, hey, they will not go along with constitutional legitimate line items. Why? And really push hard on that designation. And the point, and then see how the candidates respond to that and see which candidates break out based on the Constitution, the proper role of government, legitimate funding. Those discussions have never been had in my lifetime, Pete Sapp. Never.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was an effort, of course, and there still is. Some of the rules of the House of Representatives have required that legislation being introduced contain a statement of what constitutional function they fall under when they're asking for more appropriations. And it's just become this rote mechanical process where they say, oh, it's the 10th Amendment clause of the Constitution, or it's the necessary and proper clause, or the general welfare clause that gives us the power to introduce this bill, and that's the constitutional authority, and they walk away. They don't actually have a debate over these terms, necessary and proper and general welfare, and whether any of these proposals are really justifiable under a stricter standard, which should be applied, and that's the enumerated powers of the Constitution.
It seems to me that we don't really push for the details. And I don't know if it's that we can't because we don't have enough of the mainstream press or if they just don't. Rand is the closest one that I see that really points out constitutional realities from a fundamental understanding point of view. I don't see a single other person that does that, really. I don't. Now, Ted Cruz does to some degree, but not even like Rand Paul. In other words, he has a great speech on the floor or a great presentation, but when it comes down to facts and, hey, here's what I'm doing and here's the constitutional reality and here's why, I would say that Rand Paul stands alone. Like him or dislike him, that's the truth.
Yeah, he does an excellent job at that. And there are a few members of the House of Representatives, folks like Ted Poe, who do a good job at that, but they are few and far between.
All right, quick pause when we come back. Trump is rocking in the polls despite the mainstream press. Kurt's got details on that. And then I want to ask Pete Sepp, are they going to shut down the government? Or what do you think the future holds? What's going to happen? Is 2016 going to be a sea change? Or will it be play on the trade tracks, ignoring the train, huh?
A backpack is more than just a bag. It's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
A year ago, I was realizing that I was in serious problems with my heart. You know, I had these chest pains and so on. I realized that I had to do something and quick. I didn't want to go the medical route. So I started in doing some investigating, and somebody told me about these heart drops. I got on the heart drops prescribed dosage. Within 2 weeks, I immediately started seeing the results. This is working. I'm going to stick with it. I can't deny the fact that when I got on the heart drops initially, there was immediate help, an immediate turnaround.
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
Donald Trump said reporters are some of the worst people he's ever dealt with in his life. He said they write lies, they write false stories, and they know they're false. Well, now we bring that right around. Headline says, Kurt, media thumps Trump, but...
Well, it's a great point, Sam, and, you know, it's interesting how it pretty much matches up with what you've been teaching people for years, and that is the whole idea of he who owns the media makes the rules. He cites an instance, the story cites an instance where it basically talks about an interview that he had on an NBC program, I guess it's called the Today Show, and the lady Savannah Guthrie, but... he had kind of a tense exchange because she was highlighting a CNN poll that showed a big decline for Trump, where he dropped about 7 points. But he says, he said to her, you put up the CNN poll, you didn't put up the NBC poll, and you're the one, by the way, the NBC poll showed that he rose 7 points.
So let me get clear, she didn't put up her own poll, right?
That's right, and that's what he said, and you're the ones that are paying for the NBC poll, so I don't get it, other than the NBC poll is a very good poll for Trump.
Well, the bottom line is she's going to use the poll that downs Trump with her driven agenda. They write lies, they write false stories, and so the media thumps Trump, but polls show he's winning big. Now, like or dislike Trump, the point is rumors of Trump's demise have been greatly exaggerated. By who is the question?
A little bit. Well, it just shows you the power of the media, at least in my opinion. They say, according to Real Clear Politics, that across the country, or they say nationally, he leads by 7.7%, about 6 points in Iowa, 15.6 points in New Hampshire, 15.3 in South Carolina.
Why now, if it was Bush or anybody else, Kurt, they'd say... a commanding lead, wouldn't they?
Well, it's a great point, and that's exactly what they put in the article. They say if his name wasn't Trump, the pundits would be saying this race is over. If the name was Bush, and Jeb is in about sixth place, by the way, this guy says, and he was getting 28 and 32%, it would be all over. Yeah, they'd be telling everybody to go home. But anyway, it's
now another
point.
Quick story. Then I want Pete Sepp to respond. And I know this is kind of a derailing from normally we talk to him about taxes, but I really want to see how this dovetails into 2016 and how this relates to the government shutdown and the budget and et cetera, et cetera. It really relates right this very second. Time is critical and what they do really will matter. But the next headline, GOP primary reports out, Kurt, by Politico.
Yep. And this is where they're saying they're betting on the next, they say, three guys to exit the presidential race. Now, this report was about 20 hours ago, and they say Bobby Jindal, George Pataki, and Rand Paul are going to quit.
Another one bites the dust.
Now I can see the Jindal and Pataki, because as far as I can see, they haven't even got like 0%. But according to this story, Rand Paul at least had like 3 or whatever. Now, there's a follow-up story. I don't know if you saw it yet. But
there's the debate. Rand Paul has more support than Jeb Bush does, Kurt.
Well, that's exactly right. But they wouldn't want to really bring, you know, Rand Paul's thing up against Jeb Bush, because they'd say he'd have to go. But in a late-breaking thing, they say that Rand Paul says, I'm not finished. He says, I'm not out of here. And this was like within the last little while. He says, I'm going to stay right here in the race. So anyway, I guess that's, you know, as close as we come to right now.
Well, and we don't know what the truth is on Rand Paul's stability or not. We know this, though. The Pauls managed to stay in, folks, and don't underestimate them. Nobody thought Rand would be a senator. And first try, he got it done. So let's not count him out yet. The tenacity of the Pauls are quite, in my opinion, legendary and impressive, if you ask me. Now, I know that was a long setup. Thanks for your patience, Pete Sepp. But how does that relate to shutting down the government? How does that relate to budget discussions? How does that relate to the 2016 matchup for reals in terms of constitutionalists taking the stage to really make change?
Well, I think in the short term, John Boehner's departure is going to free him, because he is still leader and he is still in Congress for another 30 days. He's going to feel less constrained by those on his right telling him he needs to take a stand against out-of-control spending. And so we will probably get another continuing resolution to keep the federal government open, probably until December, possibly into early next year. That wouldn't be the end of the world, especially if it truly is a continuing resolution, one that doesn't fund the federal government at even higher levels. We'll have to wait and see about that. I do think, though, that this just continues to defer the debate that has to be had among constitutionalists and those who feel anything goes with the federal budget. We can't keep putting that off. The 2016 presidential election is an ideal time to do it. And I think there are very many articulate spokespeople on behalf of our Constitution who can make the point that we need to be much more careful in the funding that we end up giving to federal agencies and whether they're fulfilling their own constitutional mandates and limits.
You mentioned three people, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. Neither of them, in my personal opinion, are constitutionally qualified to be president. And then you mentioned Rand Paul. Is there anybody else on the campaign stage besides those that really would stand for true reform and understand the tax problem and what we could actually do to resolve it?
Well, there might very well be some encouraging developments in Donald Trump's tax reform plan. We'll have to see about that. I'm not going to hold my breath. There are folks like Rick Santorum, who he has just proposed a flat rate income tax plan. That's certainly an admirable step. Mike Huckabee, former governor, why he has talked about how important something like a retail national sales tax would be to replace the current income tax system. That, I think, would be a very bold step.
Do you think that a sales tax would be better than a flat tax from a spending point of view, or a reality of saving money and reducing the size of a government point of view? What would be a better idea?
It could be, because people would be able to see right on their cash register receipts how much their federal government was costing them. It would be a constant reminder for folks to question the value of the government they are getting for what they're paying. I think that would be a helpful step.
What would the number have to be on the federal level to create a dollar neutral reality? If we said, look, it's not going to save or spend money at this point, but the number, what would it need to be? Would it really need to be like the 23% that the fair tax people are saying?
It would, if we wanted to have this so-called prebate system where you can make purchases on the basic necessities of life tax-free.
I wouldn't do a prebate. What if we just said everybody's got to pay equally, we're going to make the number as low as it can get? What would it need to be?
Oh, if it were revenue neutral and no prebate, you could get it below 20, perhaps to 17 or 18.
You'd have to give the government double what you give the Lord, huh?
Yes.
Ooh,
in order
ouch.
To keep it fed at its current level, yes. Now, that doesn't mean we can't look at what the current level of federal funding is and say, look, we're going to get along on less. When you do that, you can have an even lower tax rate. And a number of analyses have been done, one of them by my own organization, of what would happen if we had a constitutional government that only funded enumerated powers under the Constitution.
Now the tax would need to be about 5%, huh?
It would be much lower, yes, much lower.
Would a 5% be realistic, or am I stretching it?
Probably stretching it, but we would get closer to that 10%.
All right, because Ben Carson is pushing for 10%, and my attitude is, why would I ever give more to the government than I give to the Lord? And, you know, if we took the Rand Paul and the Ron Paul's idea, which is to reduce foreign aid significantly, that alone could make up almost the difference, couldn't it?
It would be a helpful step. Entitlement reform is another absolute necessity. That's where the big growth in the federal budget is going to come over the next couple of decades. If we don't fundamentally restructure those, we're going to have an ultimately unsupportable, unsustainable federal budget.
Pete Sapp, it seems like this just doesn't end, that it's so convoluted Americans can't keep up with all the complexity. Is there a way to bring it to the kitchen table in a simple way?
I think so. We have begun a presidential candidate page on our website where people can evaluate not only the tax reform proposals, but also the costs of all the spending proposals the candidates are making. We've actually costed out the words that the candidates have spoken in the last two presidential debates and said, well, if somebody wants to increase the size of the Navy, here's how much this could cost. If another candidate is saying we need to beef up funding for medical research in another area, we can put a price tag on that. In many cases, they're not specific enough, but we are trying and we're getting better at it every day because, again, the more pressure we put on these candidates to offer details, the better.
And is there a clear winner yet from that point of view?
Right now, we have folks like Marco Rubio, virtually anybody who is calling for the repeal and replacement of Obamacare is already starting out with budgetary savings.
And that's really only Rand Paul and Marco Rubio and maybe Ben Carson at this point, huh? Maybe Ted Cruz, too.
Ted Cruz, yes.
Those are the four. Is Donald Trump ready to get rid of it? He talked about it, but there's nothing concrete enough, is there?
Not a replacement being offered. Quite yet.
All right, because that devil is in the details. Pete Sapp, my friend, we appreciate your hard work and all that you guys do. We're looking forward to meeting you in Washington one of these times again soon. Maybe you, me, and Trump can go out to lunch and talk about it, huh?
Yeah, and he can pick up the bill.
Amen to that. All right, sir, Godspeed. Thank you so much.
Take care.
There he goes. Pete Sapp, president of NTU, National Taxpayers Union, one of the solution-oriented think tanks in America that does a great job. Become part of them. NTU.org. They'll help you on your local level create a tax organization to reduce taxes in your local municipality. Talk about getting things done, huh? Transparency, due process, and the rule of law, the utmost importance to save America. Will you help? Thanks.